columns and videos delivered to your inbox every morning. Register for the free Denver Sports Daily at 1043thefan.com.
Go to 1043thefan.com and subscribe to The Fan Daily for the latest columns, blogs, news, videos, and more sent directly to your inbox every weekday morning.
Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan presents The Drive. Here's Tyler, Nick, and D-Mac.
Welcome to it. I know it's a battle getting home today, so we feel you. We're with you. Hang in there. You'll get there eventually. I want to read more of Adam Schefter. He actually had quite a few tweets about this proposal. And this is about extending this playoff structure. Okay, so, wow, quite a bit of information from Adam. Had the playoff structure had been in effect this season, Steelers and Rams would have been the postseason playing on wildcard weekend. Only one team would get a bye. It would only be the number one seed. So the number two seed would now have to play a wildcard game.
Fine.
Mm-hmm. All right, reading from Adam, more details. Under the current CBA proposal the NFL owners are pushing for, the playoff field would be expanded to 7 teams, while the regular season would be increased to 17 games per team, the preseason shortened to 3 games per team. Ish, still 3. Under the current transformational CBA proposal that NFL owners are pushing for, there would be more drama at the end of the regular season and 6 games on wild card weekend. Imagine 3 wild card games on Saturday, then 3 more on Sunday. So
if you have the CBA.
What a weekend that would be, huh?
I mean, it'd be a great weekend for a sports fan, but the CBA, NFLPA looking in the best interest of the players, they will be looking for something in turn. Has he listed as far as what they may want?
They want the 17th game. This is all about the 17th game. Everything is about the 17th game.
Of course it is. And it's going to come down to money, and it's going to come down to benefits from the player's perspective. However, as a fan, I like it all except for the 3 preseason games. To me, if you're going to cut out 1 preseason game, it's going to be an even worse product. I mean, holy cow, you think you don't see starters right now?
Yeah.
What if you had 3 preseason games? You would never see the starters. If you're going to get rid of the preseason, get rid of it entirely and just do it like college, where you basically the first game is a warm-up, you know? It's essentially what it is right now. Or take it down to 2 and you say, okay, the only reason why we have a preseason is strictly to evaluate younger players. Your expectation is that starters will never play, and you charge half price for people to come watch games.
I think where they're going is ultimately there's 4 preseason games and 16 regular season games, so there's 20 opportunities for generation revenue, right? So they don't want that to go away. So that's my guess why it's
That makes a lot of sense.
17 game, 3 preseason. We're still talking about 20 revenue opportunities.
As a former coach, this is where it becomes difficult for the evaluation process, right? Okay, when do you play your starters? How much do you actually play them? The guys that are coming in who are draft picks or free agents, how do you actually evaluate them looking at what the current CBA is and how it's laid out? You don't have a lot of practice time. You don't have a lot of contact days. So you have to go out and construct a team that's going to play the 17-game season,
knowing
you haven't had a chance to really evaluate these guys.
Just to be devil's advocate, you still have OTAs, right?
Oh, yeah.
In April that go through June.
But wait a minute. The guys are still in shorts and maybe helmets. So there's not much stake that you could put in that evaluation.
Get more scrimmages in the preseason, you know?
Combined practice.
Yeah. Bring them in and actually have like mock games that are controlled environments where there's no tackling, but you still get to evaluate your guys and everybody wins.
See, that's the difficult part about the sport that we've played. You know, tackling is an essential fundamental to the game itself, running, catching. And if we are having these inter-squad scrimmages and I can't see my guys tackle and I have to, you know, put my roster together and say, well, how many DBs I'm going to keep? Eight DBs. I don't know if these guys can tackle.
Well, you had college.
I don't disagree with what you're saying. It is a struggle to evaluate defensive backs in particular in their tackling skills. But the reality is you're not evaluating them right now. You're not getting anything. They're not playing preseason.
Nobody really tackles in the preseason now.
So you're not losing any opportunities to evaluate.
I'm a little different because, for me, I've always said this as a coach, especially with guys in the secondary, looking at guys who I play with, who I looked up to, and the way that I play the game. If you can't tackle, you're not playing.
Well, No. We're not in disagreement there.
Right. So let's break it down. How much do fans care about cornerbacks tackling?
They should care about the overall tackling of their defense.
How much do fans care about tackling?
They should if they don't, because that means now you're going into a regular season.
How much tackling practice do you need? You've been through high school. You've been through college. You've played games in the pros. Well, what are we talking about here? But you don't know how to tackle?
There's a lot of guys that don't.
Bottom line is Nick's not wrong. Like, for the integrity of the game, you need them to tackle, of course. I mean, if the fans want a good football team, you need them to tackle.
Yeah, but
here's
so
like,
what?
But here's the whole point. You're not getting that under the current setup.
So you're not
losing anything by getting rid of games. Okay. That's what the real point
Maybe
is.
Maybe I should back up a little bit. I understand tackling's important. That sounds silly to say that it's not. How do you practice tackling these days?
Well, if you are properly coaching, for one, I mean, the first part is you put your guys on the bag. You teach them the fundamentals of tackling.
On a bag. Okay.
Right.
Because you're not going to get hurt theoretically on a bag.
Right. Then the next step is you walk them through it. And then the third step is live action.
How much live action do you need?
You need a good amount of football. I can't break it down in a sample of, you know, 30 plays or how many games.
Well, what do you think? I mean, you're a coach. You've been through it. You're a player. I mean, how much?
Go through your average. Go through your career.
What do you need?
And think about the preseason. And how many times
for
did
example,
you get actual real live tackles?
You see, because I'm wearing my purple hat.
I see it.
I saw when the Rockies were practicing, for example, in one of their days of practice, they were just looking at a pitcher, like a minor league pitcher, throwing hard just to get timing. So they're seeing like a live arm. And then they go to where there's a pitching machine. And the ball's coming in at a shorter distance, but about 60 miles an hour. It's just for timing. And then they go to a shorter distance where it's only 30 feet away, and it's a live arm, not throwing all that, you know, significant. Then they have, you know, what, 24 preseason games, and they may get 3 at-bats per game, something like that. So you're talking about 60 at-bats. So I can see in preseason and spring training, over a period of 6 weeks, there's a way they build up. There's actually kind of a definitive amount of reps that they feel they have to need before they can face major league pitching. That's the system. What is it for tackling?
Tackling is a little different because now you're trying to put your body on a bigger person. Running backs, that's 215, 225, or a guy like Derrick Henry. To me, getting maybe 30 tackles per game, that may not be enough
to get ready for the season. What's it going to be? What's the number? What do I really need to know how to be ready to play?
What did you get during your preseasons?
During my preseason, based on the fact that I was a starter and you only had like that first game, maybe, you know, 20 plays, the next game, maybe another 25.
Right,
then
right.
The third preseason game, you're coming out of halftime. If you're lucky to have that much contact, it may be another 15 tackles. So in its totality, let's say in the preseason, you think 50 is enough of a sample size.
Hold on. You had 50 plays. That's not 50 tackles. You had 50 plays in the entire preseason. So of those 50 plays, you might have had 10, maybe. Now, I mean, 10 would have been a lot.
Well, that all depends, like, for other people. Me, I guess, taking a shot at it, I would say maybe 20 tackles.
Okay,
and for me, that still wasn't enough to prepare you for that contact that you were going to feel.
Yeah, but you know, eventually you start playing real games, and the tackles add up as time goes on. So if you need 20 real tackles,
so let me get this straight: you don't want extra playoffs, but you want more preseason.
not necessarily more preseason, but it's just the fact of the evaluation process of looking at how do you break players down and evaluate them as you put your team together, because you don't want to make a mistake.
Now that's the secret. So you've been brainwashed as a coach.
I've been brainwashed as a coach.
You have been brainwashed as a coach.
Please break it down for me.
Well, what you're saying is absolutely true, because you're literally trying to figure out the
last three guys on your roster.
Right. Because you're a coach. That's what coaches do. They kill themselves about the last three guys on the roster and the dudes that they need to bring on practice squad, because you're put into a small little room, you're watching hours of film, and you probably want to just, you know, this is not the most fun thing in the world, but that's your job. And you have to report back to some other coach about your evaluation of those guys. That's not what fans care about. So I'm not saying you're wrong at all. You're probably right. You probably need to tackle more in order to get that evaluation. The fact of the matter is, everything's set up for the stars of the league and the people that know they're going to start anyway. So seriously, how many active tackles does Chris Harris need to really be ready to play football in any given season? What are we talking about for Chris Harris, for Aqib Talib, for Champ Bailey after year 10? What are we talking about that they need?
But you're absolutely right. But these are guys who don't shy away from contact. So their skills have been elevated, and they've harnessed those skills to be great tacklers. But there's other guys. Look at Isaac Yiadom. He's not a great tackler.
Yeah, we don't care about Isaac Yiadom. It's a tough tooties, Isaac Yiadom. You better figure out a way to get better.
Well, that means you better hope that your star guys, the star three guys, your corners, right and left, and your nickel, they never get injured. Because if they do, now you're going to have to rely on Isaac Yiadom, who's not a great tackler.
I just don't think it's enough of a reason not to play the 17th game or to extend preseason. I think the one thing we don't see is good offensive line play. Because I've been told repeatedly college is lousy to get you ready to play offensive line.
It is.
And that's a question to me is like, well, how much of that contact do you need?
I'll tell you this right now as a player. If you're telling me I'm working for the exact same amount of time,
yeah,
the total length of the season is the exact same,
yep.
I get one less preseason game, and I get one more big boy check. I don't get that like $300 a week that we're getting during training camp.
They estimate it's going to be $141,000.
We get that big boy check.
Buck 41.
I'm in.
Right.
I'm in.
Right. What do you care?
Just spread your salary out over 17 weeks. That's all it is. It's not extra money.
No, it's going to be extra money. It's extra money.
Oh, you're saying it's going to be extra money?
Yeah, no, hold on. When did you get paid? You got paid during games. Not during preseason. You got paid during games,
right?
So you play an extra game, you get paid for it.
You're absolutely right. You get your check and the grand scheme of things in that way. But I'm thinking that maybe the league can toss a little something extra on the pot for 17 games.
I think the truth is these guys are in as good a shape as they've ever been. They train year round. They're in unbelievable shape, and that the first two games of the regular season really...
Like preseason games.
They really are. Like, you should not make any judgments, positive or negative, about any teams based on the first two games. Look how much things change after that, whether it's good or bad. So, to me, it's like, the NFL's already doing this. They're not waiting. And if you have three preseason games, then veterans are only going to play maybe in two. If you have two, they're barely going to play in one.
No, they're not going to play at all. If you cut it down to three, they're not going to play at all. If you cut it down to two, they're still not going to play at all. So you might as well just cut it down to two and let it be an evaluation of the younger players and just give it all to them. I'm probably in the minority on this, but I was the type of guy that played the majority of my career on league minimum. Okay, made a ton of money compared to normal America. So don't hear me wrong. But if you were to offer me two more games, if you were to offer me an 18-game schedule and I got an extra $50,000 per game, that is an insane amount of money to me.
What player's going to turn that down?
I would have been like, are you kidding me? I get an extra 100 grand for only 2 weeks of work?
Yeah, what players of the 53 are really objecting to any of this? Who are they?
None of them, especially if you're a guy who is barely made the roster on a practice squad. Oh, you love that idea.
Course.
That's another check for you.
17 games, thank you.
Yes, appreciate it.
Happy to be here.
Yes.
Who's objecting to this?
Nick.
Well, maybe they should be objecting to things, but I think most guys are just, listen, this is definitely why you guys have lost in your negotiations for years. You lose the CBA eventually every year. Because you got too many guys who are just hanging on. I don't know how baseball did it. I don't know how you guys didn't figure out guaranteed contracts like baseball did, but you didn't. And that toothpaste ain't getting back in the tube.
Too many guys on the roster.
And now they're going to give you this first. Now they're going to make things great for the Stars because they're making things better for the first round guys. You guys should be ticked
sort
on that.
Not really.
No, they're going to put more pressure on teams to extend their contracts earlier. They're going to get paid more. The first round guys, one way or the other, by what's going on today, they're going to get paid more.
They're going to get franchise tag more.
Either way, it's more money.
No, that's less. You're not understanding. That is less money. If you signed a franchise tag rather than a new contract, you are actually getting less money.
But it's more money than the fifth-year option is now. You could get more money up front, $5 million in your fifth year than you would in the fifth-year option thing.
Yeah, both of you guys have a point because it ends up being more money in the short term opposed to having more money in the long term.
I hate telling you guys this because there's a little hesitation here. The NFL is just getting better. This is getting better. It's less crap in the beginning and better games, more teams in, longer seasons that I can be a fan.
I agree.
And we're going to have a weekend where it's going to be a Saturday of 3 playoff games and then a Sunday of 3 playoff games. Are you freaking kidding me? And if my team goes with 17 games, 9-8, we're in the playoffs?
You can celebrate that. We're in the playoffs.
Well, the Broncos were 0-4 this year. It's like the season's over. It's freaking October 10th.
Here's a legit
question.
Here's a legit question off the text line.
Yeah.
What about home and away games with an odd number of games?
Don't worry about it. They'll figure it out.
That is weird. That's actually a problem.
You're in the weeds on this.
No.
It'll alternate year to year. The owners will make the money.
Hold on. Oh, okay. There is no sport except for football that home field advantage matters. Yeah. It is the only sport that home field advantage is a significant difference. We had to win at home and split on the road. That was the rules.
It's a neutral site game.
So if you got to play 9 games on the road and you get 8 at home,
you're in Mexico.
Someone in your division got 9 home games. That is a problem.
You're playing in friggin' Nebraska. I don't know.
So maybe that is the solution. Everybody has to play one neutral site game.
Yeah, you play one neutral site game.
Okay, all right. That works.
Or you break it down by the strength of schedule. How many top opponents did you win? And then if you do that, you get the home game.
Stop your complaining. John, you're on the fan. What's up, John?
Hey, D-Mac, how you doing?
Super duper. What's going on?
Well, I just had a couple thoughts about the expansion of the playoffs. Is there any talk about trying to fix the home field seeding inversion problem that happens when, say, a team like the 2010 Seahawks wins 7 games, wins the division, and a team like the 10-6 Bucks that same year has to stay at home, and the 7-9 Seahawks get to host a playoff game against the 11-5 Saints and have, you know, 12th man or whatever weighing in. I mean, one of the big inequities of the current system is that if you win your division, you get a home game. That means the 8-8 Tebow Broncos host the 12-4 Steelers and get to beat them at home. I mean, that needs to get addressed somehow in the process. Those moments are great.
But. It's a great point. Vic Fangio talked about getting rid of divisions completely and just playing. What do you say? Just play everybody in the AFC and then a game or two somewhere else.
You know, it is an interesting problem because, in theory, you've got wild card teams in the playoffs with a better record than divisional winners. You know, that could happen, and yet they're getting punished, you know?
Well, what's the value of even having divisions?
Regionality, I think, matters as far as money goes. Still? Traveling, fans, I don't know.
It's not as big as it used to be.
I don't have anything great for you.
Right.
So you just want to just get rid of the divisions entirely?
I would be fine with that.
Rivalries?
Who cares? Seriously, what rivalries? So the one time the Browns or the Steelers play the Ravens, it's just a big time. You don't need it twice. It's one time. It's awesome. Guys, come on. If there's 15 teams in the AFC, wouldn't it be cool to play every team in the AFC once and play two teams in the NFC on some sort of rotating basis?
I kind of like that.
Do we need more than that?
No, I kind of like that idea, right?
When we play the Lions this year, was that just like, oh my God, we're playing the Lions? How incredible is that?
No,
Who cares?
Of course not.
There's the AFC and the NFC. I don't know. And first of all, it's the, even the NFC and the AFC thing, who cares anymore? They can mix it up every year.
You know what? That'll be a great way to kind of inject some life into the equation.
What if this? You get rid of divisions. You keep regional rivalries. So every year, one time, you would play
Chiefs, Raiders, Chiefs, Chargers.
Yes. You would always play those teams, but you'd only play them once. Other than that, they're just really going to mix up the schedule.
It makes things definitely exciting.
How are you going to do tiebreakers?
You go back to strength of schedule, how many points you score.
There you go.
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
No, you can't do strength of schedule.
Why? But
I don't know.
RPI. Like, RPI type of thing. You know?
So now we're going to go with, like, you got to run up every game as high as you possibly can?
Sure, why not? I don't know. It depends what you value. Is it points for or points against? Usually it's points against is more of a tiebreaker than points for, but
I don't need to get rid of divisions. Divisions are, it's just supposed to be.
No reason other than it's supposed to be.
It's supposed to be.
It's been that way for a while. Why change it?
Yeah, let's not change too quickly.
One step at a time, guys.
Right. Baby steps. Yeah. Joey, you're on the fan. What's up, Joey?
Hey guys, how's it going?
Good.
All right.
Hey, I had a question about the whole game check thing.
Yeah.
So if I signed a contract for say $10 million a year for 16 games. And I get that game check, whatever that's divided by. If they changed it to 18 games, my game check would be a little less because it's divided by 18. It wouldn't be extra money.
Well, that's true if you weren't adding money into it. But what we're saying is that if you play two extra games, then you got to get that prorated amount of money. Whatever your contract is, you got to prorate that extra game into it, and then you just add an extra lump sum of money into the pile.
You get more money.
Players would never play an extra game unless they were getting more money.
And the owners know it. And they're fine with it, and you're going to get extra money.
But yeah, I mean, in theory, what he's saying is true. If they added a game without, players just wouldn't agree to that. They would never agree to that.
An owner, see, taking away a preseason game and substituting a regular season game, that's more revenue for them, parking,
of course.
Merchandising.
This is where I have sympathy for you guys as players. What's best for the fan also is best for the owners and not necessarily
best for the players.
Best for the players.
No, this kind of is what's best for the players.
But not necessarily.
What do you mean? What's the goal? The goal is to make money.
Well, the big fear is injury. The big fear is injury.
Yeah, exactly. So everyone wants to make money.
Guess what? I've had three shoulder surgeries. I had a disc replacement in my neck. I've had a back surgery. I need a back fusion. And guess what? I would do it all again because I made way more money doing that than I would ever make in the rest of my life doing something else.
Right, but also if there were extra insurance incentives that were paid to you because of those injuries that you have.
Barely got anything with that.
Yeah, but if there were, you would enjoy that too. So if you're going to play the 17-game season, put something else on the pot for those guys who are going to have the injuries.
Hey, I agree. But my point is that injuries, when you play this game, injuries is really not the concern. It's how much money can you make in your career? That's what you're trying to do.
I have asked this question to so many ex-pros, and on one hand, can you count the amount of guys when you say, hey, if you had it to do over again,
would you do it again?
Right. How many guys said, you know what, I wouldn't do it again?
I've never met anybody.
I met a couple guys.
Seriously?
When I was in Houston who were like,
they wouldn't play football at all.
I shouldn't say I've never met anybody.
Yes, I met a couple guys.
I've got a couple guys that are very messed up with the brain. And I'm sure their answer would be no.
What's your answer?
My answer is I would do it again.
What's your answer?
Absolutely.
So play another game. By the way, another interesting change the NFL is going to do that us here in Colorado, hey, we know all about this one. That's next.
Does your company make safety a top priority? Alliance Safety, Colorado's premier supplier of safety equipment, is here to help make it one. As an authorized distributor of 3M safety products and home to all pro gear, Alliance has a vast inventory of personal protective equipment designed to keep your workers safe. including fall protection, safety glasses, protective gloves, and gas detection solutions. Visit AllianceSafetyInc.net. Call 303-388-8766 or stop by the Alliance Safety Warehouse off I-70 and Tower today to lock up all your safety needs.
Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan presents The Drive. Here's D-Mac, Nick, and Tyler.
Oh, yeah!
Dreadlock Rasta.
Ah, there you go.
It was a Buffalo Soldier.
Cha.
In the heart of America.
Oh.
Is that a reason why we're playing this precise tune by Bob Marley?
How are the owners going to get the players to sign off on a 17th game? More money? Less preseason, and guess what? We're not going to test for marijuana basically at all. This is another, you see what's going on here, right? There's another new proposal for the CBA where the NFL is poised to dramatically reduce punishment for marijuana use and testing. And that's the thing. The thing really with this weed in the NFL is just the testing. If you just didn't test for it.
It's like steroids in baseball.
Right.
But yeah.
You don't have to endorse it. You don't have to say it's okay to do. But we're just not going to test for it.
So how do you catch the guys who are...
You don't catch anybody.
Not at all.
No. We stop. The NFL is going to basically, with this proposal, as part of the new CBA... Never, ever, ever again suspend a guy for smoking marijuana unless you do something absurdly stupid like Carlos Henderson, who
was pulled over
and started eating the marijuana in front of the police officer. Yeah, you can't just commit crimes.
What about Greg Robinson? Did you read about him?
No, tell me.
This is like today, or maybe yesterday. He got... pulled over crossing the border from Mexico with like a car full of weed.
Yes, you're going to get in trouble for that.
Not personal usage, like a car full of weed.
Yes, you're going to have to get a pardon for the president for that one. You're going to spend time in Colorado and not see the great outdoors. Yeah, that still counts. That's a whole different deal. As it stands, the NFL provides the harshest punishment when somebody tests, up to indefinite suspension. And the window for testing, it's wide. April 20th. That's funny. How about that? August.
They give you the date.
Yeah.
Well, we already knew the date.
So this is just...
we've known the date.
This is just... they're not going to lift the ban. They're not going to endorse smoking marijuana. The NFL's not going to do it. They're just not going to test for it.
Okay.
That's all we can do is laugh at that. We're not going to endorse it, but we're definitely not going to test it.
Listen,
so you can smoke if you want to.
At the end of the day, it does not help you be a better football player, and it's not giving you an advantage that I don't have. So if that's what you choose to do, I couldn't care less. I mean, seriously, I care if you're getting an advantage that I can't get.
Right.
I care if you're taking testosterone and you're bench pressing 600 pounds because I'm not taking testosterone and I can't bench 600 pounds. But, you know, who cares?
They say you can still get penalized or suspended, quote, only in the event of extreme and repeated disregard of the policy when there's a significant violation. Yes. Being an international drug smuggler would probably be that. Yes, getting busted multiple times for like a DUI would probably fit in there. But this is a big deal. Plus, listen, we're here in Colorado. We've been dealing with stuff like this a lot longer than a lot of other states. It feels ridiculous that there's something that's completely legal here in Colorado that you can't do in Kansas. Or Missouri, where the Kansas City Chiefs are.
Look, I personally feel like what I just said, it's kind of like what the NFL is saying. I'm not endorsing marijuana. I'm not saying, hey, go use marijuana. But what I am saying is that you didn't get an advantage over me by you using it. So I don't really care if you do it.
Who cares? I wouldn't do it. I don't think it helps you. Like, how in the world would this... Okay. And now I feel like Jake Plummer's about to jump in here and tell me about CBD oil and all the medicinal ish. I don't know. To me, if it's legal, if it helps somehow, I still go back to the fact that Jack Daniels isn't illegal. They don't test for vodka. I mean, what's worse for you? You know, a joint or a whole bottle of Kettle One. I mean, what's really going to do you in? What's going to hurt you more as a player?
But I don't know how much of an advantage it actually gives players on the field, because most players talk about pain tolerance and things of that nature. I played 10 seasons in this sport, and never once did I think about going down that road. The only thing that concerns me is the level of influence on, you know, younger kids.
Of course. That's
my only problem with it.
Well, again, they're not going to be advocating.
Well, that's fair enough, but that is why they are not endorsing it. They are just turning a blind eye to it.
Turning a blind eye. It's like kind of a don't ask, don't tell sort of thing.
Yeah.
But is that a good thing for the league to do?
Yes.
And for their is that the best interest of the players to do that? Turn a blind eye to it? We know that it's taking place. We're not going to test for it, and we're not endorsing it.
All right, let me ask you guys this. How many would you know when you would have a teammate who would show up high for a practice?
No, but I certainly knew of the guys that were like the known smokers.
The guys that did it.
But no, I wouldn't necessarily know if they showed up high.
You?
No, I've never experienced that from a practice, a game standpoint. No, but I really knew which guys that, you know, that
were
was their
guys.
They were recreational.
How often would
when
you
I
guys
say which guys, I mean like the 40 out of 53 guys.
All right. How many guys, how often would you know if somebody showed up hungover or drunk?
Oh, immediately. I knew of several guys.
Smelled it.
Yes.
You could tell.
Of course. I mean, Maurice Claret came to training camp one day with Gatorade bottles, right? And I was one. I was like, that dude is drinking a lot of Gatorade. But I quickly learned it wasn't Gatorade.
He was drinking on the field?
It was Grey Goose.
You're kidding me.
I wish I was.
He was actually drinking alcohol during a practice.
Yes, in a Gatorade bottle. And I walked by him. I was like, dude, someone reeks of alcohol. Then I looked at him, and I was like, hold on. I stood by him. I was like, yeah, that was him. But that was the time in his career that he was having some major issues.
Dude, that's wild.
Yeah, it is wild.
Okay, well, what was a bigger problem, that or, you know, somebody who had smoked weed?
At the time, that was because...
That's really to the extreme. I can't even imagine there was another player that ever did anything like that.
I had never seen a player do that.
He
was the first.
Sad, actually.
I know of others.
It did it during practice.
During the work day.
Well, people got their demons, right?
Yeah. I'd never seen somebody drink at practice. I don't even understand how you do that.
It shocked the amazing crap out of me.
Yeah.
I have seen it in meetings, though.
All right. So, listen. The NFL. Do you really be serious about 40 out of 53? Are you being serious about that?
Rough estimate, yes.
Oh, my gosh. All right, well, there you go. Another way to get that 17th game. Right? I mean, if it's 40 out of 53, and now I don't have to worry about that? Really? And I'm going to get another 141,000, and I got to play a 17th game?
I've never taken a poll, but I mean,
it looks like it's going to happen.
Based off what I've witnessed.
Right?
Yeah.
What are we
like
talking about? Listen, here's what's important, too. Don't you want to avoid some sort of work stoppage?
Yeah, you do.
Okay.
That's why players always fail. I mean, that's why you always cave, because you're terrified.
It's terrifying.
The NFL has given the players some other kind of fringe benefit stuff here. It is crazy. Be high, be drunk, whatever. Just show up. That is kind of bad.
The fans are going to love it, right? Because it's football. It's 17 games.
Well, nobody can tackle, so it's going to be a high-scoring game. In terms of the Jeff Friday situation, he spoke again. Troy Rank brings us insight next.
Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan presents The Drive. Here's Tyler, Nick, and D-Mac.
Hi, it's great to catch up with Troy Rank, brought to you by Tranny Law. As Troy has insight into everything, we talked to him a little bit earlier, asking him about the Jeff Breidich situation. Troy, how are you, my friend? We heard another Breidich apology Let me play part of it and get your reaction.
You know, I'm sorry that our fans, you know, if they've been, you know, I'm sorry that it went the, you know, this way, and that, you know, if it's caused them angst, or it's, you know, they're our best supporters of Nolan. They're the best supporters of the organization.
And he kind of went on and on and on and on and on and on. Was it a better apology? Are we getting somewhere here, Troy? Or is this kind of, what are we talking about here?
I mean, it's baby steps, slight progress. He acknowledged the thing I said on the fan on Monday when I hosted with John Davidson. Forget the media. You got to acknowledge this stuff to your fans who come out 28,000, 30,000 strong, whether you're good or not. They deserve an explanation of why you didn't add a free agent and why your offseason is defined by angering maybe the greatest player in franchise history. You can't just pretend that doesn't exist and it's going to go away. So Jeff was right to acknowledge the fans. The better apology would have been, I'm sorry that it went this way and the fans deserve to know that. We can't get into all the details, but part of the reason we didn't spend any money is because the free agents I've signed the last few years have tanked. They've been awful. We believe they're going to rebound. I believe they're going to rebound. Nolan believes that. We're going to talk to Nolan because we all want to win. That's our goal here. And we're going to get back to the table with Nolan, make that clear, and go forward. That's Jeff at some point has to be accountable for the roster that's tangled. That's my issue. You can't pin stuff on Nolan. He is not your problem. Whether he's happy or unhappy, the guy's a top five player in baseball. The reason you're not winning is because you pitched terribly last year. Nolan's not a pitching coach. And the fact you didn't upgrade your roster. That's because of Jeff's signing. So just show accountability to that. That's all. Those jobs are hard. No one's saying they're easy. But every time a player stinks, he gets benched or demoted or sent to AAA. General manager has to have accountability to roster decisions, and he needs to tell that to fans.
Troy, a little bit of a hard pivot here, but you've been all over the CU coaching search, and I saw you put out some tweets today that you said that it's down to Troy Calhoun, Brett Bielema, and Sarkisian. What do you know? What's going on?
Well, that's close. They certainly have interviewed. I confirmed they interviewed Troy Calhoun of Air Force, which is interesting because he's had overtures for years to be interviewed, and he's usually turned them down. He interviewed Steve Sarkisian interviewed today. Brett Bielema is already interviewed, you know, and I'm being told that, you know, there's just no traction with Eric Bieniemy right now until that, you know, I guess he says he's out. People will wonder, but, you know, he's in a position to get a pro job after this season. So those are the three that have emerged. Jim Moore Jr. was in it. I don't see him in the same vein as I see Bielema, Calhoun, and Sarkisian. Again, well, a good friend of mine tweeted out that an offer is out. So they could have they should have clarity here in the next 48 hours, I would think, as they move forward. All of these guys have strengths. All of them have weaknesses at this point. You know, Calhoun, can he run a different offense after being at Air Force? Can he recruit those type of athletes that aren't going to run the option? Sarkisian knows the Pac-12 from Washington, USC. His off-field issues are well known with the alcoholism. Is everything good there where he could take the stress of being a head coach? And Bielema, great at Wisconsin, disaster at Arkansas. You know, could he find magic again that he found at Wisconsin? So interesting choices. All right. I told Cheverini interviewed, but he's not viewed right now as we sit here today as the guy that would be the head coach. But I know they're trying to put a good package together for the next head coach and also find a way to increase the money for the assistants, because that's part of the reason Tucker left is, you know, the assistants not getting paid and leaving because it's just not on the par with some of these other schools.
All right, well, if in theory an offer actually is out there, do you have a gut feeling?
I don't yet. I wish I did. It's because they interviewed essentially seven guys, and it's just hard to really know where they're leaning. I mean, Calhoun, because of the local ties, you think, man, that would make sense, but he doesn't necessarily profile as the recruiter and the type of athlete and his offense. Is that fit? Sarkisian on paper makes the most sense if his off-field issues have been reconciled and resolved. But, you know, is that a home run hire? I don't know that you can get one at this time of year. Bielema, I just don't know. I just don't know that Bielema doesn't make as much sense to me because I think he would jump for the next job. He will be leaving a job as the outside linebackers coach the Giants that he took a week ago.
Well, he's proven he's willing to also. He's proven he's willing to jump to the next job before as well. He's got a little bit of an interesting background himself that's similar to Tucker.
Yeah, there's some concern there. Again, Calhoun is, you know, like if Calhoun, he'd probably be his destination final job. Just like he stayed at Air Force 13 years and had plenty of opportunities to leave. There's a lot to like about his candidacy. I just don't know. Air Force is unique. It is in a vacuum in terms of college football. So his success there should be praised. It's just different almost everywhere else than it is at Air Force. And so Sarkisian, again, he fits a lot of he checks a lot of boxes. It's just his exit with USC is ugly. He doesn't deny that. He's talked about his problems with alcohol in 17 when he replaced Kyle Shanahan with the Falcons. Said, you know, it's a daily battle for him. That was a couple of years ago. Based on the fact he worked for Alabama this last year, you got to believe that a lot of that stuff is he has a handle on it because there's no way with Nick Saban that you're putting in a half day and not working. I mean, under Saban, that's as disciplined as you get in terms of college football structure.
All right, we appreciate it. Troy Rank, always great. Are you going down to spring training?
It doesn't look like it, and that's fine. Okay. Nick Rothschild was down there, did a great job with Jeff Howe. I mean, I went, 16, 17 straight years. I'm good. If I want to get down there, but if I don't, it's not the end. I'll see the team soon enough.
Okay, good enough. Thank you, Troy. We appreciate it.
Yep.
Troy Rank brought to you by Training Law. Thanks to Troy, and thank you for listening. Thanks for hanging in there on a snowy Wednesday, day four, by the way, because we're keeping track, according to Jeff Breidich. Yes, so Cecil Lammy on day four. What does he have to say? Find out next.
Columns and videos delivered to your inbox every morning. Register for the free Denver Sports Daily at 1043thefan.com.